This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
My colleague and friend Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang to Tokyo to Lance Gatling, principal of Nexio Research. The story is that the People's Republic of China has consistently threatened Taiwan with invasion, brutality, and the kind of end game that we see in Hong Kong. You will no longer be free. At the same time, Japan, a strong ally of the United States, has answered over several years to say we will participate in the defense of Taiwan. There are other things to measure in East Asia, Australia, Philippines, Vietnam. But Japan is the centerpiece of the preparation for a Chinese invasion of Taiwan and perhaps dominating the South China Sea, reaching all the way to Japanese territory. So we turn to the headlines from Tokyo of great significance. Japan's defense ministry announces it has signed contracts worth nearly $3 billion U.S. dollars with the country's top defense contractor, Mitsubishi Heavy Industries, to develop and mass-produce long-range missiles for deployment as early as 2026. Lance, a very good day to you in Tokyo. The puzzle here is, after decades and decades of self-defense force and Japan veering away from what was once called militarism, which we understand as the military-industrial complex in the U.S., defending North America, defending freedom everywhere, Japan has now turned to building weapons of war, and these particular weapons of war have to be in mind to challenge China when and if the day comes that Taiwan is overrun. Is the Japanese public with the leadership on this? Prime Minister Kishida has been voluble and traveled the world talking about how Japan will defend Taiwan and its own territory. Is the public with him? Good day to you, Lance.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Gordon. Yes, I believe that there is a consensus in Japan. It's not unanimous, but there is a consensus in Japan that Japan has to be better prepared to meet the contingencies that are posed by the potential military power of China being levied against Taiwan and possibly Japan itself. In a recent study that for some of their major weapon systems, including anti-ship missiles, air-to-air missiles, that they only have probably 40 to 60% of that required for a significant armed engagement. So the contract that you mentioned is a modification of an existing system, the Type 12 anti-ship missile, which began life as a truck-mounted, tactically mobile a system with a command and control communication system so that you could launch anti-ship missiles, but they're very limited range. There's one modification to put on a ship that's double the range, but it's still relatively limited. Why? Because it made sense in the context of the previous notions for the defense of Japan, which were in the congested waters, the tight waters of the seas around Hokkaido, closest to the Soviet Union. But now Japan is looking at defending the first island chain, the islands that reach from southern Kyushu, the main southern island, almost all the way to the shores of Taiwan. And there are three major passages there, and the Japanese have determined that they're not going to allow those to be merely a speed bump for a Chinese fleet. What they have embarked on is to develop these missiles that they can launch from ground systems, from aircraft, from ships, and possibly even from submarines. And it's the equivalent of the U.S. Tomahawk missile, which they're going to procure up to 400 as an interim task. So they've set the goal of 2026 to begin production of these missiles. That's very ambitious. If it slides, they will have the Tomahawks. Also, they'll have the entire ISR system, the Intelligence Surveillance and Reconnaissance System that drives a Tomahawk, because you simply can't fire at a ship that's in motion, that's a two-hour flight away, and expect to get it into the view of a small seeker on a missile. It has to be updated, and that entire system is the rest of the iceberg below the tip, which is simply the missiles themselves.
Gordon, you have a question for Lance.
Lance, do the Japanese missiles that are being developed and are procured by this arrangement, do they work?
Yes, the Japanese have a very good reputation in terms of missiles. Low production, relatively low production, high quality, extended production time is the sort of thing that their defense industry does quite well. They do have a very high reputation for technical excellence, for some innovation, not an incredible amount of innovation, but certainly a very capable phased array radar seekers and things like this. And this is well known to the United States. Why? Because the Japanese test ranges are very, very limited. And these the first generations of these missiles, when they were developed, were actually tested in the United States. And I myself participated in some of the tests of the original ones. And they had a very good reputation for accuracy, repeatability, not necessarily for price. But when you're throwing a small anti-ship missile against a $1 billion ship, the price performance ratio is pretty good.
Lance, the puzzle here is we're talking about shore-to-ship missiles projecting power into the South China Sea. That involves the whole of the defense industry of Japan, not just missile firings. Is everything moving in this direction to harden the air bases, to harden the ports, to prepare the Japanese public for what would be a crisis of proportion? I can't even measure it, what it would look like. Trading missiles back and forth, and the Chinese would have to at some point deal with the Japanese ability to strike out from their airfields, U.S. and Japan. Is everybody okay with the fact that we're talking about a catastrophe?
Well, presumably the Japanese and the Chinese both recall their Sun Tzu, who said that the best preparation for war is to make sure that you are so prepared that your opponent never engages you. Do not assume he will not come. Assume that he will come, but be so prepared he will not come. And certainly there are people now faced with the possibility of Japanese tactical units deployed in their heretofore tropical, semi-tropical paradise, and they're uncertain about that. But there is a consensus that something has to be done. And you're right to point out that this is a massive change in the Japanese strategic posture, which was very heavily oriented towards the north, the large island of Hokkaido in the north, and the possibility of a Soviet invasion. That's not going to happen. And the forces that were deployed for that up north are simply not the right sort of forces. So there's a very large reorganization going on now, and there will be a retrofit of equipment to these smaller, more mobile forces that can actually participate in a sea denial strategy if the Chinese were to get involved with the Japanese in a shooting hostility, we call it a war or an incident, which the Japanese tend to do. It means that the Chinese would find that their control and access to the Yellow Sea would be contested. Right now, that's not necessarily the case because of the limitations of range. This is all part of the extended deterrence of the of the ability to strike in self-defense out a substantial range, say up to 1,000 to 1,500 miles from Japanese territory.
Gordon, you have a question for Lance.
Lance, you talked about Hokkaido and the Soviets. We know that the Russians and the Chinese have been exercising their militaries together, and they've been coordinating their foreign policies. What does Japan think about having to defend Hokkaido if the Chinese come from the south? Are they worried that the Russians will help the Chinese by pressuring Hokkaido?
It's interesting that you say that. Without a lot of fanfare, some of the largest military operations in history are going on in the Pacific right now. The Chinese have deployed two carriers for the first time. They have two large exercises going on at the mainland. The U.S. has deployed the Carl Vinson aircraft carrier. The Russians just put about 16 ships through one of the Japanese straits into the Sea of Japan. And so there's a lot of activity going on. But I think that they realize that it's much easier to defend Hokkaido now than it was in the past. But this sea denial interdiction strategy based from Okinawa and the southern islands in the first island chain, that's a very different thing and requires a lot of different types of forces. And that's what this missile development is all about. It's about developing a family of missiles with different packages, payloads, unitary warheads, sensors, loitering munitions, and fired from a variety of platforms and different services so they can all coordinate together and bring quite a lot of firepower to bear against a potential enemy force like the Chinese might feel.
We're speaking with Lance Gatling, principal of Nexial Research. He is in Tokyo, Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. There is another threat in North Asia. It is North Korea. And recently, Japan and South Korea have been talking in a fashion that was unimaginable in the 20th century, given the bad feelings between these two cultures. However, when we come back, what about North Korea and these missiles? What about China? How does it think about an opponent with the reputation of Japan rearming? Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Battle.